Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Major news in the local political world. Illinois politics. Mike Madigan stepping aside from the State House, resigning his seat that he's held since before I was born, Tom Serafin. It's amazing. I just wonder your reaction when you first heard that news. Was this at all surprising to you?
Well, he's the longest serving elected leader of a legislative party or legislative body in the General Assembly in the country in the history of the United States. So, you know, he's been around since 83, except for 2 years in 94 and 95 when Lee Daniels beat him, when the Republicans grabbed the House for a couple of years during the Newt Gingrich Revolution. But it's an extraordinary career that spans so many decades. He was first elected in 71 to the House of Representatives, elected to the Constitutional Convention in 69, where he met everyone. But he came from a good ward, a 13th ward. His dad was a big-time Democrat. He learned that some of the sleeves of some of the best Democrats in the history of Illinois at that time. So he's long-lasting. He was there for a long time.
And now he gets to name his successor. He still is chair of the Democratic Party in Illinois, still holds those purse strings. And he does write. He gets to name who gets in the seat next.
Well, he's done a good job in his ward. You know, people ask me, how do you get elected for so many years? You take care of your voters that elect you all the time and in his district. You know, so it's not uncommon for him to call people up that own companies and say, I have a student from my neighborhood who's looking for an internship. Would you give her an interview? You know, he still does that today. He still calls people up to spend $100 to go to his fundraiser where lobbyists buy thousands of dollars. But he calls up the small donors and says, thank you for those two tickets. So, you know, he does all those constituent things that a lot of people forget to do when they've been in power for a very long time. He is still chairman of the Democratic Party, still would have his hands in the new remap that will make a decision about who's elected for the next 10 years in Illinois. He's got, you know, 600, 700, 800 friends and allies working in a variety of levels of government, most in decision-making capacities. So he's still very much a person of interest in Illinois for a lot of good reasons. So he may no longer be going to Springfield as a legislator, but he's still very much in the job.
Yeah, and that's interesting because Speaker Chris Welch, who has promised to do things differently, somewhat differently mm-hmm. than Speaker Madigan, but he's a handpicked replacement and an ally of Madigan's, and certainly right. That's one direct connection to the Speaker. I found it really fascinating about you to see all of the reaction as the ripples of this announcement, you know, kind of filtered through the political world. Glowing press releases, no surprise, from Chris Welch and labor groups like the AFL-CIO, who touted how he worked for working families, and mm-hmm. progressive Democrats, mm-hmm. a couple of those, Tom, saying thank you. And it's time for a change. And then, did you see former governor of Illinois, Governor Bruce Rauner, said, this is the best birthday present I've ever received. It's like, I guess it's his birthday today.
Right. He thought he could go toe-to-toe with Speaker Madigan. He unfortunately learned in 4 years it was much more difficult. I remember doing an interview the day after Governor Rauner was elected. People asked me what he should do first. I say, take a dozen donuts and a box of coffee over to the 13th Ward headquarters and sit down and say to the Speaker, now what? Let's work together. He never did that. Rich Miller, Capital Facts, has a quote, they're a mile wide and a mile deep of bodies outside his door in Springfield of people that thought they could, you know, take advantage of him. And it didn't work out for a lot of folks, obviously.
No, it didn't. You mentioned he was very popular in his ward. I always say it's 17,000 votes is what he got in the last election. That's what it took to win. Mm-hmm. And you know, he had a lot of goodies to pass out when you're Speaker and you're that powerful. There are a number of jobs. And some of that actually might end up getting him potentially in trouble. Again, not charged in the ComEd criminal indictment at this time or in that ongoing investigation. But he's public official A. And a lot of his top lieutenants have been named. And their ward offices and their personal offices have been raided. What do you make of all that, Tom?
I think they've been after him for a long time. A legislator said on a conference this morning, you know, if they were going to get him, they would have gotten him by now. From my attitude is there's, you know, at least 24, maybe more investigations going on in the public integrity unit at the Northern District of Illinois Justice Department office down on Dearborn Street, as they refer to it, Dearborn Street. So there's a lot still going on. A lot of people are being looked at a lot of things. He's one of the smartest guys that's ever been in the business, obviously, in the country, because he set records for office holding, you know, in a General Assembly around, in the history of this country. So he knows what he's doing. Of course, the Justice Department has got a bottom, you know, they got a checkbook that never stops, so they can find, you know, they can, what's the old saying, that you could indict a cheese sandwich? Yes, ham sandwich, if you had the resources for. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of fast talking and going on in Springfield. It has been for a very long time, as well as the city of Chicago. So he may not be out of hot water, but right now he's no longer a speaker, and he's no longer a representative, member of the General Assembly. So he's given up two pieces that he could have leveraged if he was negotiating right now. So I gotta think, from where I sit, with John Lauch now being replaced by the President of the United States, who's our current Justice Department DA in town on Dearborn Street. He's the boss of all these investigations, and President Biden is removing him, as he's removing many others around the country. He's going to replace him, despite the objections of Senator Durbin and Senator Tammy Duckworth. Over their objections, he's replacing him. So I don't know. I think, you know, as somebody said this morning, you know, if they were going to get him, they should have gotten him by now. But who knows?
But who knows? When you're public official A, that's not a great position to be. Governor Blagojevich was public official A and was widely talking about how innocent he was and how he had done nothing wrong, and that they're not going to go after him until, boom, one day they showed up at 6 a.m. outside his door and said, right, come on out. So you don't know.
The irony of that is that it was Speaker Madigan that got the impeachment process going, you know, on Rod Blagojevich. So the level of political intellect there is a little bit different, though.
Yeah, it is. More to talk about with Tom Serafin, and we'll connect on the other side of this break. I want to ask you about his statement. I was reading so much into that statement. I'm sure you read it. I want to hear what you have to say about what you saw in that. That's the longest statement, by the way, I think he's ever made. I begged his office to issue statements in the past when I was covering him, and you got like a two-liner. You know, sorry, the speaker's not available at this time. This is pages and pages. So hang on to the thought. Hang on to the thought, Tom. We're going to talk about it on the other side here. It's 2:15 on WGN. Political analyst Tom Serafin is with us. He's also got a great podcast you should check out, The Crisis Cast. More in a moment. Anna DeVos is here at WGN, back with Tom Serafin, political analyst. We're talking about Mike Madigan leaving the state house. That news came, so he resigned as speaker earlier, a couple of weeks ago. What has that been? And now he's out of the state house, still the Democratic Party chair, and still gets to name his replacement, it seems. I'm looking at the statement here, and I was sort of joking before the break there, Tom, that in the past, as my prior life as a news reporter, when you tried to get a statement from Madigan's office, you'd famously get, if you were lucky enough to get one and you never got an interview with him, is that you got these two-line, you know, sort of no comment from the speaker, or, you know, something unrelated. The speaker strives to do this and strives to do that, but doesn't directly answer any other sort of things. This is a really, really lengthy statement. And I wonder, you know, kind of, you've gone through it. What do you make of it?
Well, you know what? I'm impressed at the strategic nature of the statement. Obviously, leaving, you know, the Illinois General Assembly, since he first arrived in 69 at the Constitutional Convention, it's a momentous time, 50 years. A lot has happened. A lot has changed in the state. So I think, to me, there was an emphasis on a progressive government that he has steered. I mean, a lot of his critics would say he wasn't progressive at all. But if you take a look at that statement, there's a lot of progressive pieces in there that kind of flow well together. It's also making the case for his legitimacy as a legislator and as somebody who steered the General Assembly in Illinois through so many different governors, you know, Ogilvie, Walker, Thompson, Ryan, you know, Edgar, you know, Blagojevich, Pat Quinn, you know, Rahner, and now Governor Pritzker. I mean, it's an amazing trip that he's taken. And so, you know, he should take advantage of an opportunity like this and put that out there. If you were in the traditional world of communications and PR, and he comes not from that, as you mentioned, difficult to get anything out of him for years. Mm-hmm. Today, he lays it all out there as if he's making a case for himself and for his tenure. And that helps him in many different ways. It helps him publicly. It helps him with a lot of allies. And it might help him if the federal guys decide to get too close to him. So he's strategic in the way in what he's going about doing. And I think it's the right thing to do. And he didn't ask me, but if he asked me, I would say, absolutely. You got to tell your story because nobody else is going to tell it.
You just said something. It might help him if the feds get too close to him. How does this help him?
Well, you know, a lot of people think he's a wheeler dealer that deals with property taxes for big buildings, and he makes deals with ComEd and all these other things that you read about in the newspaper. But nobody looks at his track record and what he does in between. If all those things are true, what has he done in between all those things in 50 years? Well, he laid out some.
I have it here. Let me read that part here. What you're referencing. We've had strong, sustained Democratic leadership in Springfield. We legalized same-sex marriage, abolished the death penalty, solidified abortion rights. Illinois has become the first state in the Midwest to increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour. These laws gave underserved populations a new sense of hope.
Right. And he also, you know, elected some interesting people to the state Supreme Court. He also did a lot of good when it came to getting people elected. And it was not Mike Madigan that cut the House of Representatives down by a third from 177 to 118 members. It was a Pat Quinn initiative that he did back in the early 80s, which gave Mike Madigan the opportunity to build power at the power base of the speakership with the chairmanship of the Democratic Party. Before that, you had cumulative voting, and cumulative voting meant you had a minority representative in every district in Illinois. So you had black Republicans elected in Chicago, and you had Democrats elected in Southern Illinois. Every district had a minority a representative. It was, you know, a lot of people want to go back to that because it was really of the way it should have been, but unfortunately people were upset that they had voted themselves a 40% increase in their salaries, and so they took it out on them. It was a referendum passed with 68% of the vote back in 82, 83, which cut the size of the legislature, made it easier to coalesce and buy everybody's campaign through the Democratic Party, and Mike Madigan became in control. He was smart enough to take advantage of an opportunity that the voters had given him.
Yeah, third graph down, this is standing out for me. As a speaker and legislator, I worked to make the General Assembly a co-equal branch of government, ensuring it acted as a check on the power of the governor. People would wonder, but okay, and he did that effectively, and I know what you're going to say. But hey, I think a lot of people might wonder, Tom, where was the check on Mike Madigan and his unchecked power? And the amount of things that he controlled in that state led most to believe that he was the most powerful guy in the state. And then let's just not forget that our fiscal crisis happened under his watch. So while you're talking about your accomplishments, I'm not sure he leaves the state in a better position than whence he came.
Right. There were no checks. You could say George Ryan was a check for 4 years. He pounded the table, got everybody in the room, and nobody left until they had a deal. He got a lot accomplished. Jim Edgar, 8 years while Mike Madigan, except for 2 years, was Speaker of the House of Representatives. He was Dr. No. He said no to everything. Very little got done, and Mike Madigan was frustrated by a lot of that activity. That governor said no. Jim Thompson made deals with Mike Madigan. I mean, we have White Sox Park. There's a lot of things we have because, and things we don't have because of the ability of Jim Thompson and Mike Madigan to work together. And then, of course, you have the Blagojevich-Madigan problem, and then you had the impeachment. And then you had Pat Quinn, who could work with Mike Madigan on certain things and other things they didn't see eye to eye on. And then, of course, Bruce Rauner, nothing. You couldn't get anything. Very few things could you see eye to eye on. And Governor Pritzker, if it hadn't been for Mike Madigan, Governor Pritzker would never have had the gargantuan first General Assembly he had right after being elected. Incredible General Assembly, incredible monies, packages, building road improvement programs, you know, all kinds of things, marijuana, all those things got done in that first General Assembly of Pritzker. That's because nothing had gotten done under 4 years of you had this backlog. So Mike Madigan moved it all through. And then you had COVID this year. And next year, on the budget, if you heard what the governor was saying the other day, and 22, he's not going to raise taxes, and he hopes he doesn't have to raise taxes in an election year in 22. And because Georgia went Democrat, they're going to get $12, $14 billion, Illinois will. and that will sustain itself for at least a year, probably 2 years, where the governor can run for re-election without raising taxes. They're going to have to take some cuts, and they're going to have to do some other things. But thank goodness for Senator Dick Durbin, now one of the most powerful men in the country, along with Joe Biden, to help Governor Pritzker bail himself out without any leadership in the General Assembly. Mike Madigan is gone. Not the free-for-all. The strongest will survive, and that takes usually 3 years to figure out who the strongest is going to be when you make that kind of change.
Yeah, you mentioned the budget just revealed yesterday. The governor had threatened before, a couple months back, hey, I'm going to have to raise taxes on everybody, even the people who can least afford it. Turns out he's not doing that. He said he's going to have to do double-digit across-the-board cuts. It turns out he's not going to do that either. And yet business leaders are sort of upset, and you're hearing from them in the last 24 hours saying, wait a minute, instead what you're doing, and at the worst possible time for small businesses, you're coming after us and digging into our pockets at a time when we're losing a third of the businesses, small businesses across the state of Illinois. What do you make of that argument?
Well, I think that shows an inexperience in his budget staff and the people working for him. Because if in a legislative situation like this, you don't have to take retribution out on anybody. The General Assembly does that by itself in the way they handle legislation and they handle specific legislators and districts. He's still very upset that his fair tax referendum didn't succeed last fall. 47% of the people voted for it, and 60% of the people in Illinois voted for Joe Biden. Now, those are Democrat votes. Yeah, most of them are of the 60%. Certainly 55% are Democratic votes. But he couldn't get all the Democrats to vote for his tax. He couldn't get all the unions to bust rear tail to get all those people to vote for him. So he's upset. So he's going to take it out on the Republicans. He got to look inside the Democratic Party. They weren't all there either on that fair tax issue. He doesn't need to take retribution out right now. I mean, he's 12 months from a primary. He's going to make a point of that, but I don't know if they have the will on the floor of the House of Representatives in the Senate right now to take too many scalps, because it's a very fragile political climate right now with COVID and everything. I think it's going to be much more deliberative, and I think Speaker Welch is going to be really good at what he does, and he and Harmon, who was the president of the Senate, get along very well. So I don't know if it's going to be as easy as the governor thinks it is in this General Assembly. He's going to have to be the one flexing muscles now, and because the speaker's not there, somebody's going to have to flex the muscle, and it's going to be interesting to see who rises up and does that.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, I'm closely watching that myself, because I think that there were some refreshing changes that Speaker Welch has announced, that he's not going to do all necessarily. It's not going to run it the same way that Mike Madigan did. And yet, in the back of my mind, I think he's such an ally that I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Your guesstimate on how that will play out. What do you think?
Well, I think Speaker Welch has got a lot of caucuses now he has to deal with. You know, in the old days, it was Chicago and downstate. Now it's the Black Caucus, Progressive Caucus. You've got the gender caucuses, and you got the geographical caucuses. So there's a lot of things that he has to deal with. The playing field is different. But I'd be on the phone with Mike Madigan every 5 minutes if I were Speaker Welch. Every issue I had, how did you deal with this? How did you deal with that? Who's the guy really pushing and making these things happen? You may see a legislative caucus do something in Springfield or say something, and you can't figure out, put your finger on who's actually calling the shots. But Speaker Madigan probably knows that somebody's uncle somewhere is calling the shots, or some ex-legislator has moved in and convincing certain people in that caucus to do things. And then you can get to the person that's making those moves on the chessboard and say, can we talk and can we make another move that could be good for all of us? Speaker Welch needs that kind of experienced conversation, and he's smart enough to ask Mike Madigan about it, and I certainly would be on the phone with him often.
Yeah, before I let you go, you don't think that Madigan, with the timing of this, what does it mean? Because there are many in the political world and elsewhere who are saying that this is maybe an indication that there's another shoe to drop in the federal investigation, that he got wind of that. What do you think?
He was cleaning his place out back in the veto session. I mean, the veto session earlier, the lame duck session. So he was never coming back to Springfield. Once you've ruled as the king, you know, over a body for 50 years or, you know, 40 years, you're not going to come back and sit in the back seat somewhere. He was never coming back, number one. Number two, you know, they had him appointed to 8 different committees in Springfield. So they were kind of playing some games down there, because he was never going to sit on any other committee. He was never going to go back to Springfield. So when he made his first decision, he also made this decision. But he still made the decision to continue as chairman of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And you know, frankly speaking, he's on the job there.
And, yeah.
You know, it impacts everybody.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with the federal probe, though, moving forward. Now, one very smart thing that Mike Madigan did over the years is he uses a flip phone, and that will help him, I think, in ultimately.
Yes. he's always known when to speak and when not to speak, and as you say, he rarely speaks. But it had nothing to do with being Anna. It had everything to do with being Mike Madigan.
It's just very odd to me, as the speaker, he rarely speaks. Just think about that for a second, Tom. All right, well, I'm going to listen. I'm going to your Crisis Cast. What's on the agenda for the Crisis Cast, the podcast this week?
Well, we're going to talk to some young people about how they deal with each other and each other's needs. You know, psychologically, a lot of young kids today are having issues and trauma, being, you know, home at school, can't see their friends, can't do this. And so that's a real crisis that we'd like to get deeper into. Let's address it. And Matt and Zach have done a good job in finding some kids for us. So I'm anxious to listen. It's a real need right now to be helpful there.
Important stories to listen to. Thank you, Tom. Thanks for lending your time and perspective.
God bless you guys.
You too.
Stay well.